Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 2nd of October. In just one moment, Professor Julian Zelizer will be joining us. He's just a terrific analyst of all things going on the political front, professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. The Senate has passed the economic rescue plan, the vice presidential debate. Oh, a lot of people are going to watch that. We'll be on tonight. We'll look at those issues with him and welcome your phone calls. In just a moment, I'm here today with Mike Crane, who is Chief Operating Officer for Wisconsin Public Radio. It is our fall membership drive, and we're asking for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. You probably know that listener donations are really the foundation of our budget, and that's why we're asking for your gift right now. Make your pledge of support at WPR.org, or you can call toll-free at 888-202-2552. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. It's good to be here. And that number again is 888-202-2552. We have a goal today for this hour of $3,000. Meeting that goal will help to make this program, Kathleen Dunn's program, possible in the months to come. So won't you be the first to make that donation this hour and get us started? Make your pledge online right now at WPR.org or toll-free 888-202-2552.
We're going to be hearing from our guest, who I think is a wonderful analyst of all things on the political scene, Professor Julian Zelizer, who has been with us several times before and talking about the big news of the big news of the day, the financial rescue plan passed by the Senate, the vice presidential debate tonight. We've spent so much time on all of these issues and I think informed you so well. First, of course, we need to take care of some business, and we don't do this very often, so let's do it now. Wisconsin Public Radio is listener supported, and that means we need to hear from you to keep our radio service going strong. Your financial support, a huge part of what makes this program that you listen to frequently possible. I know it's hard to put a price tag on the programming that you love, but if you would think just for a moment about how much Wisconsin Public Radio is worth to you, and then make your pledge of support, please, WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. I must tell you that we cannot do this without you.
And this is the Ideas Network. It's intelligent programming, a great source of talk, 9.5 hours locally every weekday from Wisconsin Public Radio. And you can support it right now by joining online at WPR.org. Put your contribution to work right away by making your pledge with your credit card. You know, it only takes a moment of your time, and you'll be investing in a service that keeps you informed and engaged with the world every single day. Your contribution in any amount will provide the essential support that Wisconsin Public Radio needs to be here. So click and join at WPR.org right now or call 888-202-2552.
We all know that it's important for all of us to stay informed of what's going on a state level, world events, national events. At Wisconsin Public Radio and on this program, you get so much information, commentary, even suggested reading. I know many of you, I see actually at the grocery store, and you talk about a book that you've heard or a discussion that you have heard and remembered, and then we carry on the conversation and read those books. What an intelligent audience you are. We have programs that help you clear your mind, and every now and then we entertain you like we did this week with a show about baseball. Go Brewers today. They're going to win, Mike. Support all of the programming that you value securely online at WPR.org, or you can call toll-free. Again, the number is 888-202-2552.
Of course, the Brewers' goal tonight, Kathleen, is to win.
Exactly.
And our goal right now is to raise $3,000 in this hour. And for your pledge of $120 or more, you'll receive the WPR Member Benefit Card. The card entitles you to two-for-one deals at restaurants and bed and breakfasts and cultural attractions all over Wisconsin. If you're traveling, you can order member benefit travel cards for other states and enjoy two-for-one deals while you're traveling. And there are about 10,000 benefits that are nationwide that you have access to. So make your pledge right now for $120 or more and receive your WPR member benefit card. Call 1-888-202-2552 or click on WPR.org to make your pledge.
All of us together, as you know, can do more than each of us as individuals. And we are together every day and have been for many years talking about all the important issues of the day. When we all give, those contributions add up to help bring you great programs. And WPR exists because you contribute. Your contribution really makes a difference. So please give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, things that are essential, like public radio, need support. So because you believe this is an essential part of your day, please call right now and get the member card as a thank you. Also, make sure that you're helping us to reach that $3,000 goal. We'll have an update for you on that a little bit later in the hour, but we hope you'll get in touch right now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Mike. We'll see you later this hour. There is so much going on in the world and in this country. We have a lot to talk about with our guests this hour. As you know, of course, the Senate passed the economic recovery. What do you call it now? It is a new term, so we'll think more highly of it. The Economic Recovery Act is what is it officially called. We'll talk about that. Tonight, of course, the vice presidential candidates are debating. We will talk about the Palin versus Biden vice presidential debate and a lot more on the table. And our guest is just a fine analyst. Professor Julian Zelizer is a professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. Our on-air number for you to join this conversation is 800-486-8655. Our phone calls, our phone lines have really been flooded as we talk about all that's related to this presidential race and to what's going on in the country financially. So get your calls in early, 800-486-8655 for you to join our conversation. Professor Julian Zelizer, thank you so much for joining us again.
Thanks for having me.
I was real interested, and partially many of us have memories from the Great Depression from our parents. My dad was one of those guys who had to forego college and flip hamburgers, actually, because his family lost everything during the Depression. The New York Times had an interesting piece yesterday morning, which you probably saw, and let me just give you a paragraph from this and go from there. There is good reason for the public skepticism. The experts and policymakers who so desperately want to take action have failed to tell a compelling story about why they are so afraid. Can you respond to that? Do we have reason to be so afraid here and something needs to be done, or do we need something else? I think some of us are confused. Many people are angry, and we don't know how bad it could get.
Well, I think if you hear from most economists, there's the potential for bad things to happen. I mean, clearly, the crisis that we've seen in the last few days does have some echoes, either with the stock market crash in 1929 or even with events in the 1970s when we kind of suffered ongoing stagflation and the economy just kept getting worse. But what we see in these moments is that initial crises, initial shocks, if they are not contained, if they are not improved, can turn into much worse economic conditions for everyone. And I think, you know, that's the kind of case the supporters of this bailout package are trying to make.
And do you think they've been effective in making that case or not?
No, I don't think they were. I mean, I think initially this really sounded like a measure to save Wall Street. And I think initially the argument was that saving Wall Street is important, but many Americans don't buy that. And I think there's some skepticism that the money is just going to shore up existing Wall Street institutions and not really help people struggling with their mortgages. And I think President Bush had trouble making that link. I think in the last few days after the House Republicans really killed the bill and then there was the downturn in the stock market, I think some of the Democrats have been doing a better job and some of the Republicans in making that connection.
Mm-hmm. Now there will be enormous pressure, I would imagine, on House Republicans and also on House Democrats to give us something on Friday.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, House Republicans are on the spot. I think they're still the ones identified with undermining the legislation because they've been very open about it. They've been very open. They don't think this is a good measure, not just because it's for Wall Street, but because it's a huge form of government intervention, which contradicts a lot of what they're about. Democrats need to maintain party discipline. One of the things that happened last week was they didn't do that with that last vote. A lot of House Democrats, when they saw this was sinking, you know, they jumped off the ship, and they can't afford that this time. They need a, you know, it's a majoritarian institution, the House, and so they need everyone in the party to vote for this.
Are there substantial differences, and I know we haven't had a chance to look at it, it's over 400 pages, this Economic Recovery Act, but they keep talking about sweeteners to the original bill. Do we have a whole different thing at play here now? Have they added a lot?
Well, we could. I mean, they added, you know, a relief from a kind of big middle class tax that's about to hit alternative minimum tax. They added some goodies, spending goodies, from what I heard, and some other measures. And so what happens when you add sweeteners like this in legislation is they're hoping to, you know, attract X number of Republican votes through this that they didn't get last time, and a few of the Democrats who were nervous and voted no, that they'll be more willing to say to their constituents, look, not only are we saving the economy, but you're getting these specific benefits. The trade-off is some fiscal conservatives in the House are not going to like this. The bill goes up in terms of cost, and so I think the leaders are kind of trying to make a trade-off here. What they get from the benefits is more than they're going to lose from the cost.
I was struck last night, Professor Zelizer, with the number of auto sales, how they have dropped, a huge drop in the last month. And I'm thinking, is this just the beginning of the drop that we're going to see in other kinds of commodities? And will a bailout here turn that around rapidly?
We don't know. I mean, there's all kinds of signs from auto sales to home sales that beyond the crisis of this week, things are just not good in the economy. And the economy, I think what's happening, it's fragile already. And I think the fear is shocks like this in the investment and in the financial system can really just shatter something that's fragile. I mean, if the economy was stronger, maybe we'd be more confident. We don't know what the bailout will do. I think the biggest hope is that the confidence it instills in investors, in homeowners, that is what we're trying to get, just the sense that everything is stabilizing rather than the sense that everything is on the brink of another Great Depression. And confidence and emotion is a very important part of how markets work and what government does to try to calm markets. That was part of the story of the New Deal. It wasn't just about policy. It was about instilling confidence again in what the economy could do.
Do you feel sorry for both of the presidential candidates? Whoever takes over the office is going to have, you know, all of this money and economic recovery and not very much money to do many new programs. What a place to be in, huh?
Yeah, you think that sometimes behind the scenes they're scratching their heads and wondering if they really want to do this.
I think they do.
The reality is, you know, here's a kind of two candidates talking about change and making great promises about what they're hoping to do, from health care to immigration to other kinds of, you know, social spending or military spending. And now they're inheriting this kind of economic mess, a huge program with this bailout, assuming that it passes. That's really going to be kind of the main item for the next few years, and all other kinds of built-in spending commitments, Social Security, Medicare. So there's not a lot of room to do new things, and they have this fragile economy. So, you know, in some ways, they're setting themselves up for a difficult presidency.
So have you put your money under the mattress?
I don't think you need to do that yet, but again, I'm not an economist. I'm following this like everyone
right.
else. I think what both candidates need to do, and our current president, who's still president, is to instill confidence not to do that. I mean, I think that is actually the question they need to answer. Should we put our monies under the mattress? Americans after this week have to be convinced that the answer is no.
Right. Let's look. We're going to go to phone calls in a moment. Our lines are all full, but I want to talk about the vice presidential debate, which I imagine millions and millions and millions of people will be watching tonight, Sarah Palin versus Joe Biden. It's going to be quite a matchup, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is the magic about Sarah Palin is that she is, you know, the focus of media interest. And this vice presidential debate is you know, going to rank very high. And just in terms of how many people watch, it might be higher than the presidential debates. You know, everyone's basically waiting to see if this is a train wreck and if she just can't answer questions and she stumbles. And everyone's waiting to see if Biden just says outrageously offensive things. So, you know, we're looking for the weakness of both candidates. I don't think anyone's tuning in to see how good they are. And so that makes for an interesting night.
I guess it does. I wonder if in his debate preparation, we've heard so much about her preparation, I'm wondering if Biden, who's a pretty sharp guy, isn't going to fashion some kind of question or in some way get her on the things that she doesn't seem to know from her infrequent media appearances?
I think they will. I mean, I think if they've been watching these old clips that have surfaced of her in the Alaska debates, she's good. I mean, she can handle this kind of environment. She's pretty smooth. And even if she doesn't know an answer, she can speak and still say the right thing, even if being vague and not having a specific response. But they've also seen the Katie Couric interview and the Gibson interview, and I think they sense that if you ask her the right question where she doesn't know the answer, that they can get her to literally stumble in front of the cameras. That's what they want to do. So I suspect they're figuring out how Biden, in answering a question, can essentially ask another of her. And to find some area, probably a foreign policy, where it's likely she just doesn't know what he's talking about. But he has to do that, again, without being abrasive and offensive. Without, you know, Americans who are watching saying, well, you know, she doesn't really need to know that. She'll learn it as she's vice president. And why is he being like that?
Right.
And so that's the balance he faces.
Well, what about that? Doesn't she need to know all those issues?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think in general we should want vice presidents and presidents who are knowledgeable on all the basic facts. Certainly we'd hope they know what the Bush Doctrine is. Which has been a basic form of our foreign policy since 2002. But at the same time, it's true that a lot of the candidates really do learn on the spot about a lot of the world. That's just the reality. We saw the same kind of questions and issue with George Bush, and you know, most of what he has learned has been in the White House. And it might not be the best way to do it. It is true that they often do learn, though, once they're in office.
Mm-hmm. And what about this issue? So much has been made of it in the media that he has to be careful. She is a woman. You don't want to create sympathy for her. You can't beat up on her. It seems to me as though we've come a long way in this country, and she can take any kind of criticism. She can take somebody who's pointed, and I'm sure she will be pointed with him. What is all of this?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think sometimes it sounds like a throwback to the 1950s,
right,
or something. That,
yeah,
she, you know, he has to be very delicate and he can't be aggressive. You know, she is a tough politician, and I mean, it's almost more insulting to say he can't be aggressive in his responses or questions to her. I think we're at a point right now where that just shouldn't be the issue. It shouldn't kind of be that one gender requires a different treatment than the other. I think, you know, they should both be themselves, and they should both take tough questions and ask tough questions. And frankly, from what I've seen of her, I think she's more than comfortable in a real tough fight.
I agree. Let's take some phone calls in a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn, and our guest this hour, as we look at the economic rescue plan and tonight's vice presidential debate. There's so much going on, isn't there? Professor Julian Zelizer is a professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. Our on-air phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, and we'll be with you in a moment on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to your phone calls now, starting with Scott from Waupun, Iowa. Hi, Scott.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
Your guest has already spoken a bit about the focus on experience for all four of the candidates of the major parties, and that's the question I have for him. As a historian, how well has experience been a predictor of a person being effective as president? For instance, President Bush, you know, was governor of one of our largest states, and one must suspect that history will show that he had one of the least successful presidencies ever. So in the past, how well have different kinds of experience predicted the success of a president? And if experience is not something we should be looking at, then what is a better predictor of presidential effectiveness?
Mm, good question.
Experience isn't always the best thing. I mean, I think he's right. Some would question whether the current president had that much experience in general. But there are cases with very experienced people and things go wrong. Lyndon Johnson was extremely experienced in politics. He knew how Capitol Hill worked. He had a very good sense of public policy. He had been in politics since the 30s. And you could argue his presidency really ended as poorly as one could imagine with Vietnam. And there's many cases like this where experience does not equal good governance. Some would say Dick Cheney is the most experienced vice president we've ever had, and many don't think he's done such a good job. You know, on the other hand, a lot of people think John Kennedy was a great transformative leader, and while his family was more steeped in politics than either Barack Obama or Palin, you know, he was still relatively new to the scene, and he had a very good sense of how to lead and how to be, again, a transformative figure. So a lot of experience certainly does not always equal a lot of good decisions.
Richard Nixon had a lot of experience. Look what happened there.
Absolutely. You know, it can be the opposite. A lot of experience can make kind of harden you. It could make you less willing to take chances, and it could get you so trapped in what you've been through that all your decisions, they can't be fresh, they can't be bold anymore. Lyndon Johnson, for example, was always trapped by the debates over Korea and how Democrats had suffered because of Korea, and that was part of why he didn't want to seem weak on Vietnam. And it was part of the push into Vietnam. The current administration, a lot of the advisors were so frustrated with Operation Desert Storm back in the 90s, which they had been part of in 1990 and 91, that they were determined to get Saddam Hussein. And it was the experience that led them to that decision. So we can't always say that experience is a great thing.
Thanks, Scott, for the call. Gino is next from Waukesha. Hi, Gino.
Good morning.
Hi.
Yeah, every once in a while I'll turn into a whiny radio and listen to Rush Limbaugh, and he had been talking that, blaming the Democrats for this fiasco that we're in right now with the economy, saying that it was a law that Clinton passed where they had to do equal housing and equal loans for minorities and lower income people, where they had to give them, the banks had to give them these loans, and those are the loans that are in trouble right now. And I was thinking that it would be more or less like loans to speculators where they were buying two or three houses and trying to flip those and make a quick profit would be more of the problem. I was wondering what your opinion is on that.
From everything I've seen, that argument that that's the source of the economic collapse, minority home owning, seems quite exaggerated. I mean, it's clear what's going on is there are kind of multiple areas of vulnerability in the economy. And I think what the politicians are wrestling with it's not just one area. That would be much easier to resolve. I haven't seen the evidence that that argument really kind of holds water.
Thanks very much, Gino, for your call. Roger from Milwaukee. Hi, Roger.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my phone
call.
Three comments, and I'll take them off the air. Responses. One, you started out with a comment saying that you kind of felt sorry for these guys because they're going to inherit this economy. First, I'd like his opinion. I don't feel sorry for John McCain. He's been there 26 years. Could have done a lot of things to change things, and he didn't. Barack Obama walks in. I do feel sorry for him, and even my sister and I thought about not voting for the candidate we want because we think this is such a nightmare. Nobody's going to be able to work themselves out of it. So vote for a Republican. In 4 more years, everybody will be so disgusted with the GOP, they may never get a president for another 20 years, which maybe wouldn't be so bad. That's the first comment. Two, about Sarah Palin. I'm dying to do this tonight. I'm hoping it's a Tammy Faye whole thing. But what do you think about every time she comes up with a stutter or some cute little smile and doesn't complete an answer? Everything's a gotcha question. And I think that's kind of, it's getting kind of silly that you can't answer anything. And, Gene, to compare her to say, oh, well, most Americans wouldn't know that. She's not running for most Americans' jobs. So, to me, that's worrisome, even as a vice president, let alone she could be president where things are at. And lastly, about the debate tonight, I don't think Joe Biden is the kind of guy to be condescending. I think he's highly intelligent. He's been around. I think he should just almost put on a blindfold, not listen to whether he's debating a male or a female, and just give the responses you would. And I'd love to hear your responses.
Yeah, I'm anxious to hear them too. Thanks for the call.
On the first question, I mean, I think it's not kind of feeling bad for John McCain. it's feeling bad that or thinking that we're going to have a president who's basically in a straitjacket for the next 4 years. And that's, regardless of party, it's not good for the country. You know, ideally, you want a president and a Congress that has room for maneuver, that doesn't have to be so trapped in fixing things, that they can't do new things. And we haven't had many years like the Great Society or the New Deal in a long time. And you'd want to think that we'd have a moment like that where presidents can innovate. You know, we make this election all about all the kind of different things these guys can bring to Washington, whether you're, again, conservative or Democrat or liberal, and all their promises. But if they don't really have the opportunity to do any of them, I think there is a sense of frustration. It's not just for them. It's for us, for voters. That's part of what gets public cynicism up about what Washington does. In terms of Palin and the gotcha question, it's a good point. You know, the strategy from the start has been to make this about the media rather than about her. And she's been useful for the Republicans to build a campaign theme, a kind of about blue state elitism and cosmopolitan, urban, Starbucks media being out of touch. And so I think it's not that the gotcha question is just a way just to mask things she doesn't know. I think it's a very conscious strategy that Republicans picked up on the minute the media started jumping on her family and all the scandals early on. So I suspect we'll see more of that, and it's a fair criticism, though. And the final question I'm forgetting, the third part of that.
Yeah, that we need to move on anyhow. Okay. So it's okay. There were a lot of questions. You wouldn't recommend, I don't think, though, that people who feel one way vote another way so that we can continue difficult times.
Yeah, I never get that argument. I mean, you know, that we'd want things to be really bad.
Really bad. Let's get them worse.
Party. Probably that's not what we want. Ideally, you should be voting to have the situation overseas and at home stabilized, and that should be your main priority in evaluating then which of the two are best. And it's actually hard to predict, you know, kind of what's going to happen politically. Some might have said that, you know, a lot of Democrats should have been happy that Reagan was elected in 80 because the economy was a mess and foreign policy was a mess. So, you know, rather than having Carter and Democrats deal with it, let a Republican deal with it. And in fact, it turned out pretty well for Reagan and for conservatives. So it's a dangerous prediction and also probably not the best one to judge our candidates on.
Gerald from Exonia, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
All right, how are you?
I don't know. I just get the impression that even, you were on the other day and the questions you asked and from the tone that you really believe that this bailout that's happening, that people are just misinformed, and if they really knew what was going on, they would be for it. And nothing could be farther from the truth. I mean, there's plenty of informed people. I read the paper cover to cover every day, the Wall Street Journal, and it can't, these like credit default swaps. There's $55 trillion of these things that they've wagered against each other. $700 billion is not going to do it. So, you know, it's Wall Street innovation run amok. And throwing, and I think the government's put us $10 trillion in debt, and they want to get one more trillion on the way out before they have no more power. And that's, I mean, and when you're on the radio, you make it sound like, well, people that are against it, oh, they're just misinformed. And I just don't believe that.
I don't think people know exactly what's going on. I think it's fairly complicated. They don't know the ramifications of this. It's a tricky thing. That's part of the problem here. We don't know what to do. We don't know about our retirement savings. We don't know about going to college.
Wait, don't tell me. They said this is money we don't have, giving it to people who don't need it for reasons that they can't tell us.
So what do you think we ought to do, Daryl?
Well, you know, I don't think you can go into a casino and say, well, we're going to give everybody their money back. People have played a game and now it's paid a piper.
So we need to be content with losing money.
Well, I think if, you know, and then they say, oh, the stock market lost $1 trillion in value. Well, maybe it wasn't worth what they had it marked at. If somebody's got a used car and they say, well, now it's worth $1,000 less. Oh, I lost $1,000. Well, it's not worth that much. The stock market wasn't worth what they were saying. It lost $1 trillion. Well, that's what it's worth. If you go buy Beanie Babies, somebody might give me $600 for a Beanie Baby, but it's really a bag of beans that's worth a quarter. As long as somebody else gives me $600, I'll buy it and sell it. But one day they're going to realize, hey, I got a bunch of 25-cent Beanie Babies here.
Professor Zelizer, what do you think?
I mean, I think it's a legitimate point, and I think there is legitimate criticism left, right, center about whether this bailout will work and kind of what is the actual cause and ramifications of what we are going through. And I think if you hear most of the politicians, they agree they're not sure this is the best thing or what exactly to do. But there does seem some consensus that something bold is needed and that the current bailout is, of all the alternatives, the best one offered. And again, going back to earlier, I think the case they're trying to make, supporters of this, is it's not simply about recouping the losses of a few kind of Wall Street investors who've lost their money and we want to make sure they're okay. I think the fear is the ripple effects of what's going on, banks closing, investors pulling out. There's an article in the Times today about how some colleges and universities, just another effect, their kind of money is locked up from their endowments and their trust fund or in their endowments, and so they're having hiring freezes and they can't give, you know, scholarships. And that's just one case. And so the fear is if you let this go, it's not really just about Wall Street. And so both sides are making a bet. The side that says don't do anything is making just as much of a gamble, because if things go really worse and the bailout needed, it grows, then, you know, maybe they would have said, well, this was actually the time to act. But it's a kind of chaotic moment with a lot of uncertainty. I think what you hear from Barney Frank and Dodd is we don't want to do this. We don't like how we got into this mess, but this is kind of the best solution on the table, and that's what you have to go for.
Daryl, thanks very much for the call. We'll continue with Professor Julian Zelizer, Professor of History and Public Affairs at Princeton University. Stay right where you are on the line because I know these issues are important to you and we want your contribution and we'll be with you in just a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn and I'm joined in the studio by Mike Crane from Wisconsin Public Radio. And as you know, we are in a pledge drive and we are here to ask for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's really your contribution, financial contribution, your spoken contribution that makes the work of WPR possible. And it's so easy to make your donation right now. Just go online at WPR.org or call toll-free 888-202-2552. Hi again, Mike.
It's good to be back, and it's very interesting to look at how things are going this morning. You know, our campaign goal is $900,000, and we're working on that, and we've had a great morning so far on the Ideas Network. During Joy Cardine's show, we raised about $19,000, and we've raised another almost $6,000 so far just in this hour, which is great. We're so pleased that people are getting in touch with us and making that contribution, and we make it as easy as we can. We still have a lot to raise to reach that $900,000, though, so your pledge will help us to reach that goal and to stay on track financially. Make the pledge now, securely online at WPR.org or toll-free 888-202-2552.
We'd like for you, and I know many of you have, to make a habit of donating to Wisconsin Public Radio to pledge your support today. And some of you are listening for the first time. We draw in a lot of people during political election time because a lot of us love to cover this. It is so important, and I think we really do it better than anybody. So you may be listening now, and you want to renew that support then every year. It's a good habit. It's a habit that you can be proud of. So we ask you to get it started today with your pledge online at WPR.org or call toll-free at 888-202-2552.
You know, Kathleen and her producer, Rhonda Fanning, try to be as timely as possible when choosing topics and guests. Case in point, this morning, our talk with Julian Zelizer, just fascinating discussion and fascinating from you callers as well. You make a good part of Wisconsin Public Radio possible just by calling the Ideas Network and getting involved. We're asking for a little bit more, which is also to call another phone number, 888-202-2552, to make your contribution today. You know, a lot of loyal listeners tune in. They want to hear the in-depth discussions that go beyond the headlines. And one of our favorite features is All Things Political that we have every Monday morning. It's all made possible by listener contributions at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Please make your contribution at WPR.org to help us pay for the great programming on Wisconsin Public Radio. We, of course, are talking politics now, and one of my favorite times of this year was taking this show to Iowa. We had a heck of a time, and here we are now, very close to the election, and I think we've informed you as nobody else can do. Your contribution in any amount will give us the resources we need to make things happen here at the station. Call in your pledge right now. The number is 888-202-2552. Either way, you'll be doing your part to support the programming that you count on. So please go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And as the guy in charge of programming, you know, I find that a lot of people will tell me that WPR is their companion during the day. Now, we're on 24 hours a day and 7 days a week, of course. And so whether you're at home, in the office, in the car, with others, or alone, concentrating, relaxing, we're here for you. Just take a moment now and be here for Wisconsin Public Radio by contacting us at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Again, that number is WPR.org or 888-202-2552. We seem to be doing well this hour, which is great, Mike, and thank you so much for responding positively to all that we've been doing together, covering the world, covering politics, covering money. Donate now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and thank you ever, ever so much. Thanks, Mike. See you a little later. Professor Julian Zelizar is our guest now, professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. I feel like I'm in this fabulous political science class right now with one of the best teachers, and how often do you get a chance to sit in one of those classes? Actually, you don't even have to sit in the class. You can have a cup of coffee and be wherever you are right now. He'll be joining us again in one moment, and we'll welcome more of your phone calls on air at 800-486-8655. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Back to your phone calls now, 800-486-8655, for you to join our conversation. Anne from Madison.
Hi. I think that we ought to be a little more skeptical about what's going on. This was a supposed last-minute crisis with a solution, a three-page document written by the Secretary of the Treasury, a billionaire who started his career with John Ehrlichman in the Nixon administration, who has produced the solution to this problem. First of all, biggest conflict of interest ever. It's going to lead to more monopoly. We've been seeing great big institutions swallowing up little ones. There's going to be more reckless speculation. This is going to encourage it because there's a complete absence of re-regulation or the imposition of a line between investment banking and banking, which we deposit money in a bank account. It can be used by its sister side of that institution for speculation, and they can lose every penny of it and then pretend to us that somebody actually has the money for us to withdraw. But most important, I think, is that this violates the 16th Amendment to the Constitution, which says, quote, "The Congress shall have power to lay and collect taxes on income from whatever source derived." The rest of the sentence. It's just one sentence. There will be lawsuits. There will be massive lawsuits, and this solution will be contested. So it's a self-interested, trumped-up, outrage. And hundreds of thousands of people have called and emailed members of Congress. I understand that something like 95% of them are completely opposed to using the public's money, which is easy for Congress to do because they are getting money out of this.
Professor Zelizar.
Well, there's the criticism, some of it. And again, the question isn't just what's wrong with the bill or some of the potential problems with it. It's also what to do. And I think what opponents haven't done so far is to say, well, if this isn't what we do, what is? Do we just let things fall apart? The conflict of interest argument is kind of interesting. I had heard a little bit about that. I don't think there's a lot of evidence that's what's motivating members at this moment, seeking some kind of financial reward. If anything, there's a sense of political desperation in Washington, and a true sense of crisis that we don't like to have among our politicians. And Congress does control the power to tax and spend, but it also delegates a lot of power, and including tax power. It's done in the past in different ways. So there is room for Congress to do this, and it's not necessarily going to be unconstitutional.
Thanks, Ann, very much for the call. Let's go to next, Jean from Germantown. Hi, Jean.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to make two points. I was watching C-SPAN last night, and Senator Shelby made some very interesting comments about the amount of money that's been made from some of these top officials in the companies that have gone bankrupt, and also that this bailout money could be given to the people who owe on their mortgages, and it would have a trickle-up effect. So the other comment I wanted to make is that the professor had said that this is the best deal on the table, but I think this is the only deal on the table, and there could be other options, but people aren't exploring that because it's kind of like a panic reaction. We have to do something, so this will feel good, so let's do it now, whether it makes sense or not. So I can take my comments off the air.
Thanks, Jean, for the call.
Yeah, it's a no-win situation. I mean, if Congress waits more and you had more days like we saw a few days ago with the stock market plunging, constituents get angry. Why are you waiting so long? Why is Congress so slow? And why doesn't it act like we want an executive to act? And so, you know, Congress cobbled this together. They put stuff on executive pay caps, and they put some stuff for homeowners, and they're trying to give a mix of what to do. On the other hand, if you do it too quickly and you actually act more like an executive rather than a legislator, people say, why are we rushing this through? So I think a lot of politicians in the worst time possible politically are feeling kind of both sides of that argument. And I think they're kind of struggling with how you put this together in that context.
I know that we're in a situation where we have to carry on, but you have to understand sometimes how you got to where you are. It is inconceivable to me that somebody didn't see this ahead a long time ago, Professor.
I agree with that. I mean, I think it makes me think of, you know, the 9/11 Commission, where initially there's a sense of unpredicted crisis and tragedy. And then the more we learn, there were some warning signs, many warning signs that could have been useful to different administrations and different politicians to at least diminish the chances of a successful attack on the United States. We saw the same with weapons of mass destruction. Initially, it was a shock there was none in Iraq, and then we started to learn there were warning signs along the way. And my guess is we're going to learn more and more about what happened with the economy being the same. There has been talk for a while about potential problems with the financial markets and threats of deregulation. We've heard that. But my guess is as this calms down and as we move to the next stage where we look at how did we get into this, we're gonna slowly find out there were many more warning signs that were not taken seriously.
Right. Aaron is next from Harvard, Illinois. Hi, Aaron.
Hey, how are you guys?
Okay, how are you?
Actually, my question has to do with that very thing. There was some years ago that they put in some legislation. I'm going to murder the name of it, but I think it's Sarbanes-Oxley. And in that legislative measure, they asked us all to do reporting so that corporations would have greater transparency, so that none of this that we're seeing today would ever possibly happen. And if it does happen, it's because someone did something criminal. And so I think the question all of us have, at least in my office, is how in the world did we not see this coming?
Mm-hmm.
You're right. I mean, I think that's where Congress, after this legislation passes, has the power to really do something constructive. The great power of Congress is to investigate. Problem is, you know, some of them have been supported, many of them have been supported by this industry, so there'll be pressure on them not to investigate too much on what went wrong. But that said, I think the public's angry. And so I think the next stage after the legislation is to have a real kind of serious Watergate kind of investigation, to be honest, into kind of what's been happening with deregulation, what led the market to become this fragile, and have people been doing bad things that got us into this. And I don't think we're going to do that before this legislation passes. It's impossible. But Congress needs to do that next.
Yeah. Professor Zelizer, thank you so much. I'd like to be in your class every day. You're so good at explaining things. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. Professor Julian Zelizer is a professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. Never fear, he'll be with us again. And this topic, of course, is front and center as we approach the last days of a presidential campaign. And everybody's trying to make sense of what's going on and is pretty worried about what's going on as well. So we'll be on the case. We'll be on on the case. I'm Kathleen Dunn. I'm joined in the studio by Mike Crane from Wisconsin Public Radio, and we are here to ask your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. Your contribution, as you know, makes the work of WPR possible, and it's pretty easy to make your donation. Just go online at WPR.org or call toll-free 888-202-2552. Hi again, Mike.
It's good to be here. You know, we had a goal of $3,000 for this hour, and we've doubled it.
Oh, that's terrific.
In fact, we've more than doubled it. The latest tally I have, and the pledges are still coming in, $6,500 raised.
Oh, terrific.
42 pledges, and even better, 36 new people. So what that means to me is that people are getting the message about the Ideas Network and public radio generally, and they're making that call to 888-202-2552 or contributing online at WPR.org.
We want to remind you that the quality of guests that we have is just top-notch, and our guests come back again and again because the quality of listeners we have is top-notch. I just love Professor Julian Zelizer's style. I think he's clear-minded about issues. He's not particularly partisan about anything. He's just good. It's like sitting in a class and you say, oh, I love this teacher. I want to take this class again next year. We have access to guests like this because they like coming on Wisconsin Public Radio. They always praise you, what a highly intelligent audience you are. And so what's having access to guests like this and the information they provide worth to you? Well, think about it for a minute and then make your pledge online at WPR.org or call toll-free at 888-202-2552.
You know, maybe you made a donation to WPR a few years ago and you feel like you've done your part. Well, as you know from all the people signing up for their new membership, maybe it's time for you to do the same. This is something you've relied upon so much year after year, and we need your continued support to keep this organization strong. So has it been a while since you've donated? Then please rejoin now online at WPR.org or toll-free by phone 888-202-2552, and we'll be glad to have you back in the family.
A lot of people, you listen in the car. I know that I've been in the car, and you have to sit and wait for a while to hear a conversation finished. I hear that from people frequently because you're so absorbed. Or you listen at home. Some of you listen at work. You can listen to WPR in many places. You can listen to WPR.org any old time you want. And you can get podcasts of some of our programs on your iPod. It's a great way to keep WPR in your life, no matter what you happen to be doing during the day. Pledge now to support the accessibility of really great radio. Online at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Listeners who rely on Wisconsin Public Radio are the most dependable source of income for this station. Pledge online at WPR.org or call right now 888-202-2552. Your contribution will provide an essential part of the support for the programs you hear on WPR. Perhaps you can make a $1,000 contribution. Some people can't contribute at all, but if you could contribute $1,000 and help them out right now, that would be terrific and help to pay for this programming and keep Wisconsin Public Radio strong and growing as you provide a leadership contribution. Pledge online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
The quality that you hear in our programming reflects a great financial investment. Many of our costs are associated directly with broadcasting. NPR News, what will we do without NPR News? I mean, I literally, during the day, make sure I go to the radio at the top of the hour to hear the news. And our wonderful news here in Wisconsin, the Associated Press, sophisticated equipment, all cost money, and we have to pay for light, heat, and telephones. Your financial support helps pay the bills, really, to bring you quality public radio. So we ask you, please, to help with these costs. Make your donation at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We invite you to help make this a record hour for this terrific program with Kathleen Dunn. You tune in for all things political and sometimes the lighter programs like our discussion about the Brewers the other day, you know. And we hope that you enjoy it enough to make that call right now at 888 888- 202-205-2552. Join some of the people who've contacted us in this last hour. And, for instance, we had a call from Wauwatosa that Cook says, I've been listening for 2 months now, and I like the variety. How about you? Do you like the variety? Can you call right now, 888-202-2552, or contribute online at WPR.org.
See, some people for 2 months. Mary from Spring Green, been supporting since 1960. We are a lifeline for many of you. Very valuable source of true information and other people's opinions. Jim from Merrill, I've been a longtime listener and enjoy the programming. The quality, you hear it again and again, Mike, don't you?
Yeah.
The quality of programming is great. This person listens a lot. As I work all day on architectural drawings, fortunate enough to be able to turn to Wisconsin Public Radio for my continuing education on various subjects and ideas that truly enrich my days. Thanks and go Brewers! All right, I'm with you. So, do you want to give the numbers again before
absolutely.
We go to the news?
888-202-2552. That's how you get in touch with us to make a pledge. Of course, we love it when you participate in our call-in shows. The other way is to get in touch at WPR.org and make your contribution now. Thanks.
Great. And I'm so glad we're doing well this hour. It makes you feel good. We're off to a great start. Thanks to Mike Crane for being with us from Wisconsin Public Radio, Chief Operating Officer. Thank you, Rhonda Fanning, for producing this show. I love this guest. We need to have him on more to analyze politics. John Treader, a longtime volunteer for us, who enjoys what he does, and people like hearing John when he answers the phone as well. Thank you, John. And thanks, everybody, for all of your calls this hour. News coming up in a moment, and we'll return with more Thursday Conversation on the Ideas Network.